from St. Louis Public Radio. This is the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air. I'm Jason Rosenbaum. America's campaign finance system is a failure. I know. You're probably thinking that's a declarative and subjective statement, especially coming from a journalist who barely got a B- in math class. But objectively speaking, the federal system that regulates how campaign money is raised and spent is just not working. For decades, candidates have had to abide by strict donation limits to their campaigns, while political action committees that support them can take unlimited amounts of money from a donor. It is perfectly legal for candidates to participate in fundraisers for PACs that could support their campaigns or oppose their opponents' campaigns. That creates a system that honestly feels like a farce or a charade. Elections aren't less expensive under this system either. In fact, here's how Michigan U.S. Senator Alyssa Slotkin, a Democrat, reacted when she was told earlier this week in Midtown St. Louis that several U.S. Senate races in 2026 could eclipse more than $1 billion in spending.
I don't know how Missouri feels about swearing. I'm a little worried, you know. I know, but the Midwest has, we all know. Is it all right? Is it right? Okay, that's what we call in the business crazy. $1 billion is crazy.
Slotkin was attending an event sponsored by End Citizens United and Stand Up America, two progressive-leaning groups that want to, among other things, overhaul the nation's campaign finance system. And the fact that Slotkin uttered profanity to describe the role of money in American politics is pretty telling. The lawmaker represented one of the most competitive House districts in America before narrowly winning an extremely close Senate race in 2024. So her races have been quite costly. And like me, she doesn't have a particularly positive opinion about the federal campaign finance system.
A complete farce. I mean, I call it a Frankenstein. It is a patchwork of horrible, different decisions and laws and rulings that have created the worst campaign finance system we could have made up. If there's one thing I would do to change our politics, it would be to change our campaign finance system.
Now, before anyone starts gnashing their teeth and writing angry typewritten letters to me, let me be as direct as possible. There are right-wing political action committees that influence campaigns and left-wing political action committees that influence campaigns. All sorts of ideologies use politically active nonprofits to affect elections without disclosing who is funding them. And there's not one campaign finance-related proposal or idea that is going to completely eradicate outside groups from participating in the electoral process, whether it be the crypto industry, companies that make artificial intelligence, or supporters of Israel. But even with all of these caveats, that does not change the reality that America's campaign finance system contains easily circumventable limits and creates incentives to make money very difficult to track. So I asked Slotkin what she would do to make things better.
The way that you handle this is you change the way people get elected and you change what they're allowed to do when they're elected. So to get elected, first of all, get rid of partisan gerrymandering across the country, make it illegal, and then ban corporate PACs, period, and make it illegal to have dark money involved in our elections, meaning you have to actually know who's donating the money and in what way. And to me, until you start fundamentally changing the system so that big sums of money can't just be dumped on a campaign, the rest is more or less window dressing. So, and then when people get in office, they can't enrich themselves. There's actual real penalties if they use the office to enrich themselves.
Some of the things that Slotkin mentioned here could happen on a state-by-state basis, but would likely go nowhere federally unless Democrats retake Congress and the White House. Even then, banning things like partisan gerrymandering would need to go through the Senate, which is notoriously tough for ideas with serious opposition. Tiffany Mueller of End Citizens United told me another intriguing idea, a public financing system for campaigns, something that countries like Canada have done for many years. This is not a universally beloved idea, especially since there's some squeamishness with using taxpayer dollars for political electioneering. Mueller says an American public financing system could be funded with a tax on political action committees or fines on corporations.
Cockroaches are more popular than members of Congress. And the faith and trust in our government to address the big problems that we're facing is almost nil. We have to figure out a way to actually put the incentives back on the side of public officials working for the public again. And public financing, what we have seen in the states and the municipalities that have implemented it, is one of the best ways to do it. However, let's say we don't do it. Fine. Great. Get rid of the super PACs, get rid of the 501c4s, get rid of the unlimited and undisclosed funding. This idea that money equals speech is root cause of our problem.
That money equals speech line references a philosophy that a lot of Republicans have subscribed to for years. It's at the heart of the Citizens United decision, which allows corporations and unions to make unlimited independent expenditures in campaigns. Overturning that decision would require either the Supreme Court to reverse itself or a constitutional amendment, two things that are just not happening right now. Some Republicans have suggested a radically different approach, getting rid of campaign donation limits to candidates. As former State Senator Bill Eigel noted to me earlier this year, Missouri had this unlimited system before the passage of a 2016 constitutional amendment putting in place fairly strict donation limits to candidates.
Before that went into effect, we had the one thing that we could be sure of, even when a lot of money was coming in the door, and that was transparency. It was very simple. If you got a big check, the money, you had to report the big check, and then voters could make up their mind themselves whether or not they thought those big checks were a good or a bad idea. In fact, that was relevant in my first race. If you recall, I got several large checks in that first race from an individual, David Humphreys. Mm-hmm. There were commercials made about it, and ultimately the voters got a chance to make that decision. If they felt that that was a problem, they were going to vote for one of my opponents. If they felt that I had the intestinal fortitude to withstand the pressure from those checks, they were going to vote for me, and they made that decision.
To be clear, this system that Eigel described did not stop big donors from using PACs or politically active nonprofits that conceal their contributions. But he is absolutely correct that it made big donations easier to track, since they were often going directly to candidates as opposed to PACs with nondescript or vague names. A lot of political candidates prefer to have money going directly to them because they can control what happens to it. But even some Missouri Republicans who voted to remove campaign donation limits in the late 2000s concede it created unintended consequences. That includes former State Senator Jason Crowell, who represented several Southeast Missouri counties. Crowell started his political career under a limited system and ended it when he could get donations of unlimited size. Here's what he told me in 2015.
It's a complete different dynamic when you first get elected and you have to build the relationships and knock on the doors and do everything to raise X amount of dollars at that level. You're touching a lot of people, and then you're leaving your cell phone, you're hearing ideas.
Given how unpopular the unlimited system was with Missouri Democrats, I asked people like Slotkin and Mueller whether raising the limits that someone could donate to campaigns to, say, $25,000 per election would incentivize people to give to candidates instead of PACs. Neither thought that idea would work, especially as Mueller pointed out, since PACs would still be a tempting option for large donors.
Here's what I think you would get if you just went to a $25,000 system. You would have billionaires giving candidates $25,000 and then turning around and giving super PACs $10 million. Right now, we know that 75% of super PAC funding is coming from 100 billionaires, right? That is obscene, especially when we're talking numbers of $20 billion that were spent in 2024. So we actually just have to get rid of that completely.
I asked Slotkin how realistic it was to make these types of campaign finance changes even if Democrats retake Congress and the presidency in 2029. As I mentioned before, getting things through the Senate is hard, especially with a filibuster that requires 60 votes to pass anything. Slotkin says big campaign finance changes can be done, but it requires buy-in from Republicans.
Well, look, some of that stuff we've already voted on when I was in the House. I mean, it can be legislated and should be legislated the minute we take back the House and the Senate. Now, we need Republicans who actually also believe in campaign finance reform, which is harder to find. But in my mind, these are things that can be legislated, and that's the way our system works. Supreme Court makes decisions through their rulings. The only way to push back on that is to legislate.
Given Congress's propensity for perpetual gridlock, it's hard to be optimistic about creating a campaign finance system with rules that promote ethics and public transparency. But one thing is for sure, legislative inaction will only make an already broken system even more broken.
This episode was produced by Jason Rosenbaum.
Our audio engineer is Aaron Doerr. This podcast was mixed and edited by Aaron.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Self regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.